Blog Talk Radio.
Awesome effing video. Anyways, Don's on the line, and Don, I'm pulling you in 30 seconds. So what if your life does end abruptly? And what if you can't change the world, Bernie Sanders? And what if it's just a 400-foot plunge from the cliff into the sea? Tonight's topic is famous suicides. And we're going to weave a couple other culturally important dialogue into that setting. With that, I'll bring in Don. Are you up for the mystic thought tonight?
Yes, I think so. This is going to be more or less a winging it. I haven't had time to study any major topics that you want to discuss. We'll just do what you want to do and be the lead.
Well, I was just, surfing the web the other night, and we have done one other show at least on suicide, but this isn't culturally relevant to any particular politics. About 8 years ago, I was in a advanced master's lit class, and I did extra credit on John Berryman, a famous poet from Oklahoma who jumped off the Minneapolis Bridge in by the U of M in January. First of all, that's a stupid idea to jump off the bridge in January. But he committed suicide, and then I was just like trolling down the most famous people who died in the Wikipedia version, and I found out that Tarita Cheyenne Brando, who was born in 1970 and killed herself at age 25, was the daughter of Marlon Brando by his third wife, Tarita Taripata, which was a famous Tahitian actress whom he met while filming Mutiny on the Bounty in 1962. Now, the reason I'm not bringing this up for any type of actor significance, but this story is simply amazing. While growing up, Marlon Brando did not allow Cheyenne and her brother Tohoto to visit him in the U.S. He said, "I don't think I will let my daughter and son go to the States. As Tahitians, they are too trusting. They would be destroyed by the pace of life in the U.S." So, in other words, he wanted to protect him from the Hollywood scene and all that kind of stuff. Well, one night, Cheyenne, who was, I think, still around age 20, got in a fight with her boyfriend because he wouldn't let her use drugs. So she got in the car and she hopped in her mother's Jeep and got in a bad car accident and damaged her face. And up to that point, she had been a model. So she had to get surgery on her eye. She damaged something under her lip. She had a lot of cuts on her face, but a couple of the injuries were really serious. So at that point, Marlon Brando flew her to Los Angeles for surgery. So she did end up going to the United States. Anyways, she sustained a broken jaw, laceration under her eye, and a torn ear. The torn ear was repaired in Tahiti, but not anything else. So then when she got to the surgery to undergo reconstructive and cosmetic surgery, she realized she was pregnant. Well, a couple of months later, she was pregnant by a 23-year-old named Dag Drolet, who was the son of a Tahitian politician. Well, Christian Brando, her half-brother, thought that he overheard her say that Drolet was physically abusing her. And I think what happened is she was mixed up with drugs and had two former suicide attempts. But anyways, it was Christian Brando's opinion that this guy was bad for her. So late one night, he killed Dag Drolet in cold blood, and he said it was accidental, but it wasn't. Well, then he was charged with first-degree murder, and Cheyenne refused to testify. Well, anyways, on June 26, 1990, when she was 20 years old, she gave birth to Tuki Brando. Soon after the birth, she attempted suicide twice but was detoxified with drugs in a psych ward. She finally succeeded at the age of 25. I guess the whole thing was is that Christian Brando was later diagnosed with schizophrenia, but the whole thing is that Marlon Brando's and all his offspring, their lives had turned. Their lives, basically, he neglected his children. He left them on Tahiti sometimes for a year without visiting. They felt neglected. They had emotional problems. And every one of his children practically ended life. I'm not sure about the children from the other marriages, but a lot of them died. Christian Brando died just a few years ago at age 50 in 2008 in Hollywood Presbyterian from pneumonia. So it's possible he had HIV, but I'm not sure about that. Supposedly, looking on his bio, he had 16 children, but he had three different wives, and I think he only had five children from those marriages. So he died at age 80 in 2004 in Sonoma, California. So he lived a long life, but he was kind of a, you've heard stories about him, I'm sure, through the years, how he was kind of a bad boy and reckless. And I just think it's tragic that these kids, even though they weren't part of the Hollywood scene, they were still affected by a dysfunctional parent. Don? Don?
Yeah.
So I don't think you heard what I said.
Oh, no, I heard everything you said. I just had you on mute for a second.
Okay, well, anyway, what I was saying is that Marlon Brando, his third wife was named Tarita. She was a Tahitian wife, like an island girl.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, like, the kids were out of control, let's face it. Christian Brando was diagnosed later with schizophrenia. I didn't look up how much time he ever served for the murder of Dag Drolet, but he killed his sister's lover, who ended up being the father of her child, and then she committed suicide. And it was just weird, okay? They had a weird life.
I already told you that's why I moved from L.A., from Pasadena, from Hollywood. You know, that is an area that is not conducive to life. Those people are existing, and they're not really living. They're trying to portray something that they're really not, and that's superhuman beings. And those, you know, that's not the way to prove it. But, Marlon Brando was a very, very weird person. He went to Tahiti because he didn't like the American governmental system. He hated it. He hated white people, and he hated him, in a way, hated himself for being white, because he really did enjoy the company of black people. He spoke at black rallies, and he, he was fighting for the black cause long before anybody else was. Long before anyone made it popular, he saw what was happening. So his children had to go through some traumatic times of identity. And living in the Hollywood culture and having to deal with identity, and your dad is a kind of a weird dude anyway, because I don't think he just stuck with ladies. But you know, he's one of the oldest men, I guess, in Hollywood ever to have with kids. He had
don't mix
kid
him up
and,
with Rock Hudson, who turned out gay. Let me just read two things.
I want to read
this comment he wrote about Jews, but before I do that, I'm going to read this background quick. The filming of Mutiny on the Bounty affected Brando's life in a profound way, and he fell in love with Tahiti and the people. He bought a 12-island atoll. I guess that's like an island, a sectional island. And in 1970, hired an award-winning architect, Bernard Judge, to build his home and natural village there without despoiling the environment. An environmental laboratory protecting seabirds and turtles was established, and student groups were welcome there for many years. Tragically, in 83, a hurricane destroyed many of the structures in the resort. Now, I want you to... you were right about some things. I'm surprised you know about this, because... you know more than I do. In the aftermath of the 68 assassination of MLK Jr., Brando made one of his strongest commitments to furthering King's work. Shortly after his death, he announced he was bowing out of a major lead role in a film called The Arrangement, which was about to begin production in order to devote himself to the civil rights movement. I felt I better go find out where it was, what it is to be black in this country, and what the rage was all about. Brandon said on a late-night talk show, the Joey Bishop Show, that with co-star Martin Sheen, I'll never forget the night that Reverend King was shot. And I turned on the news and Marion, I think he's talking about Marion somebody, was walking through Harlem with Mayor Lindsay. And there were snipers and there was a lot of unrest. And he kept walking and talking through those neighborhoods with Mayor Lindsay. It was one of the most incredible acts of courage I've ever seen. I don't know who he's talking about. Who's Marion?
I don't know if it'd be Marion Barry, but he's Baltimore. But he's D.C., I mean. But he might have been walking with him. But who, that doesn't.
Yeah, I know who Marion Barry is. Then he made a strange comment about Jews, you know, like the Jews kind of control the movie business. In an interview with Playboy in 79, Brando said, he said, you've seen every single race be smirched, but you never saw an image of the kike. Because the Jews were ever so watchful for that, and rightly so. They never allowed it to be shown on a screen, which means people treating Jews in a derogatory manner. The Jews have done so much for the world that I suppose you get extra disappointed because they didn't pay attention to that. He made a similar comment on Larry King Live in 1996, saying, Hollywood is run by Jews, it's owned by Jews, and they should have a greater sensitivity about the issue of people who are suffering. Because they've exploited, we have seen the N-word and greaseball, we've seen the chink, we've seen the slit-eyed dangerous jab, we've seen the wily Filipino, we've seen everything, but we never saw the kike, because they knew perfectly well that that is where you draw the wagons around. Oh, my God. Larry King, who was Jewish, replied, when you say something like that, you are playing right in, though, to anti-Semitic people who say the Jews are, and then Brando interrupted. I don't want to continue on that thought line.
Okay.
So what's on your mind tonight, Don?
Nothing. I just wanted to mention one more thing about Brando. That's why he didn't bring his other kids to the island, because he knew that they'd be impure for the island to have American kids running all around it. So that's one of the reasons that he kept that. He didn't want them. He mentioned early on that he didn't want them to go to the island. But let's face it, you know, Caucasians have brought diseases with them that other nations and natives of those nations can't handle. And anyone who, who understands,
by the way,
tendency, and they understand some.
He wasn't very nice to Cheyenne. I'm like, right before that car accident, she wanted to come and see him tape a couple movies. One was The Godfather and one was The Freshman. But he wouldn't let her over to the U.S., and that was part of her rage. But the fact of the matter is that you're right. He wanted her and her brother to preserve their natural habitat in Tahiti, but she was kind of corrupt anyway. She was doing drugs here and there. And by the way, his son Christian served 10 years in prison for voluntary manslaughter because he was drunk when he shot that guy. And then Brandon delivered an hour of testimony in which he said that he and his former wife had failed Christian. And then he gave a 30-minute speech to Dag Drolet's family apologizing for the death. So he was kind of an emotional person.
Who? Brandon?
Marlon Brando.
My gosh, emotional is that's the softest thing anybody can call him. He was a raging fucking lunatic. The guy was a pampered snob. he thought everybody loved him, and his philosophy was the only thing that mattered, period. And his children were going to be treated with some kind of he didn't want them to get too comfortable. And he knew, but he didn't. He couldn't help it because he was all over the place.
Woody Harrelson went through a phase where he went and lived on an island by himself for like a year. And he kind of went off the deep end too a couple times.
Well, you've got to, and I've mentioned this whenever I talk about actors, actors and actresses, they are inherently schizophrenic.
Or
you
narcissistic.
In all essence, it's the opposite of narcissism. But they're crazy. I'll put it bluntly. They're crazy. They have to be, because half of the year or a quarter of a year, depending on how successful they are somebody else. You know, most of these actors are someone else's name, and they have to get into character, which is a phenomenal, and they're not themselves. Probably a third of the year, they're not themselves. And so imagine how crazy you have to be when you're somebody else for 3 months, 6 months, a year.
Well, I just watched an interview with Katie Holmes tonight, and in Batman, she played a character similar to the girl next door in Dawson's Creek, and sometimes you can take elements of your own life and project it into your character.
She's played a lot of roles
that were similar to her childhood, so it's not always an about face. Sometimes it's close to the way you grew up.
Oh, yeah. No. You have to. You said occasionally. You have to all the time. Every bit of your life, if you're an actor, if you know about acting, every bit of your experience has to come into every project, every character that you play.
Well, I know because I took method acting in Los Angeles for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can conjure up the emotional side, and other times you can use different techniques. But let me just tell you this one part of Brando's life that you were right on the money on. Marlon Brando made the following comment about his sex life in an interview with Gary Carey for his 1976 biography, The Only Contender. Homosexuality is so much in fashion, it no longer makes news. Like a large number of men, I too have had homosexual experiences, and I am not ashamed. I have never paid much attention to what people think about me, but if there is someone who is convinced that Jack Nicholson and I are lovers, they may continue to do so. I find it amusing.
Right. And I've said this many times on the show. 99.9% of the actors and actresses in Hollywood are, if not completely gay, bisexual.
I wouldn't say 90%. I look at old pictures of Marlon Brando, and he was just as gorgeous as Paul Newman, you know? But Paul Newman stayed married to the same woman for his entire life, like 40 years. He created that salad dressing that went to charities and is still being used at McDonald's. And he also did a number of other charities, and he was never self-centered. And I think it just differs from actor to actor. You know what I mean?
All right. I'll amend that. I believe now it's probably about 98.6% of all actors in Hollywood are gay or bisexual.
Well, my Tajikistan boyfriend is a Hollywood coming up, he's not gay, he's Muslim.
Oh, okay, well, this is a new day. There might be, the figures might come down to 84.2.
I mean, how can you be so gorgeous Marlon Brando was gorgeous.
Well, that's the whole point. That's the problem with. I won't go into it. Anyway, gorgeous. You're using the right word. Men love gorgeous men just as much as women love gorgeous men. And gorgeous is a word that connotes a soft beauty. And men don't take that word very, very well. But, you know, for the most part, gorgeous is, again, like everything else, subjective. One person
well,
can be gorgeous.
This show isn't really about gorgeous people. It's about people who have gone astray. Now, I don't really want to bring up Robin Williams, but out of all the people that I read on Wikipedia for famous people who killed themselves, it was poets, novelists, wrestlers, and porn stars. That was the highest group of suicide.
All right, now you're not because I understand the dentists and police
and musicians
and some others. Because you're talking just about the creative genre, but
I'm talking about famous. So, for example, there were a couple doctors in there. There was a football player. There was a serial killer. There was a Belgian film director. There was a Cuban-American poet, the governor of Montana, Forrest Howard Anderson,
the Egyptian leader
of the Al-Qaeda, Russian film director, famous, an Austrian physicist who created thermodynamics, Ludwig Boltzmann, killed himself in 1905.
This
list is famous people. They can be writers, scientists, musicians, police officers.
They're not famous if they're dead. You know, I've had they're all mentally unstable. They're in purgatory, so they don't even know if they're going to heaven and hell. And their fame is highly diminished by the fact that they've committed this grave sin, one of the gravest sins there is. But, you know, these folks are all crazy, and you're not understanding that mental illness traverses of humanity. And in this case, people who are quote-unquote intelligent or hyper-intelligent have a very high propensity for suicide because they don't see one of two things, either that they are perfect or that they can't go any higher than they've gone in their studies and they feel worthless. So, you know, these people have mental illnesses, and that is one thing that has not been addressed at all in this country. And it's a shame because large mentally ill are our veterans, and they're the ones who are getting the shaft completely.
Yeah. The reason I decided to do this show about this is I think people are tired of the same old topics. But I did want to bring up two people that might be relevant to our normal conversations. Abbie Hoffman, who was a political and social activist, he overdosed from phenobarbital in 1989. And then there was an American senator who fought a lot with, his name was Lester Hunt. He was a U.S. senator from Wyoming. He fought a lot with Joseph McCarthy. He was an outspoken opponent. You know, there was even scandals in those days because the day after he died, his son tried to solicit a Washington, D.C. police officer for male prostitution. And then it became big news. So that's kind of creepy.
It's all creepy. I mean, Well, when you've got too much time on your hands, these people have, they're not, their jobs and their lifestyles over time become perversions, and they grow and manifest themselves in innumerable ways, and those who don't have the discipline to handle it, it turns out to be felonious in many instances.
Yeah,
So
I
we're looking
screwed
at
up on that last comment. Hunt was elected to the Senate for another term in 48, but he didn't kill himself until June of 54. It was a year before that his son, Lester Jr., solicited somebody. He was the president of the student body of the Episcopal Theological School in Cambridge, Mass., but then he was arrested for soliciting prostitution of a male cop, and that was a year before his dad killed himself. So I guess the father was embarrassed, and that probably contributed to the suicide. I guess the conclusion of the show, we're not ending the show right this minute, we've been going 30 minutes, but one of the conclusions could be is it doesn't matter how famous or successful you are, but if you can't handle, I mean, I've known people who were orphaned and survived. I mean, look at all the struggles Dick Gregory went through and he survived. But if you can't handle life's problems and you crumble, then suicide is an option for some people.
Well, suicide is an option for those mentally ill, I will reiterate, and also those in extreme pain, extreme chronic pain. And when I say it's suicide, I'm not talking about, I would rather see assisted suicide than any suicide. If you can, but those things are very prominent arguments for suicide. Now, I've had a couple kids. I was a coach for several sports for 20 years. And a couple of my kids, of course, committed suicide. And that's such a pain when you know them, 12-year-old kids, 14-year-old kids who you knew when they were 10 and 8, and they're not here for various reasons. You try to wonder what they were thinking, and this, if you're a perfectionist, that's when you have all the psychoses.
I don't think I could have
You
handled
had
knowing
to be
someone
perfect.
that I do. My brother-in-law shot himself in the head, my sister's husband, but I was living in Minnesota when it happened. Craig and I had just moved back away from Los Angeles, but I think if I was coaching a kid and they killed themselves, I'm not sure if I could handle that. I mean, I could handle it, of course, but I think the first 3 months I'd be in a fog and keep wondering if I could have said or done something different.
Yeah, and it was longer than 3 months. It was after he found out it happened, the first one was longer than 3 months. The second one was a little shorter period of time, and then there was a third, but I was his assistant coach. But the first time I learned of suicide, though, was with my one of my girlfriends in college. And it brought us closer together because her sister killed herself, and she was studying hard to be a dentist, and so it was a very, very difficult time for her. But I was there to stabilize her during her studies and
Well,
testing
they have
and
support
trying to
groups
get out
like
of
when my daughter died, she didn't kill herself, she died, but I
it.
joined Compassionate Friends. It was a group for people who had lost children. But there was one lady in the group who her son had committed suicide at age 17. So
Well, the suicide, it's all ages, but when you are 15 till 23-ish, those are the years that if you have a loved one, who's in those years, you really want to pay attention to virtually everything that they do so that you know what emergencies to expect during those years.
I did read in the famous list they mentioned one girl who had been bullied her whole life, and then she got bullied on MySpace, and she was from like Nebraska or somewhere like that, and she killed herself as a result of just cyberbullying.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of
sorry.
Yeah, and that other guy who jumped off the Washington Bridge in like one of those college towns. Because his roommate taped some of his gay encounters in his dorm room.
Exactly.
So, his name was Tyler Clementi from Rutgers. He killed himself by jumping off the George Washington Bridge because his friend exploited his situation when he was vulnerable. But
right,
people
exactly.
like, you know, John Belushi from Animal House.
Right.
They said that it's possible he didn't kill himself because he just accidentally mixed some drugs. Because he had just gotten married about 3 weeks before his death. So he was reckless, but he didn't necessarily intend to kill himself.
You think? you mentioned the suicide in your. The people you were mentioning earlier, and not suicide, drug overdose. You know, drug overdose is totally different in most cases than a suicide. And they shouldn't really be in exactly the same, but any chemical use any chemical use, whether it's doctor prescribed or street, whatever, out of the retail store, out of the liquor store, you know, all of that has something to do with playing on your body and psyche, and your psyche is not you anymore, but it's different. Suicide is different where you're deliberately trying to kill yourself in a manner that might include drugs. But the drug, when you overdose, you do not necessarily know that you're going to overdose. So that's not an intentional
I know,
act.
And there is another Russian model in this list whose name I can't find right now. That
these people are crazy.
Balcony in New York, like from the 20th floor, and they still don't know if it was an accident or suicide.
Well, suicide is it's an intentional act that is essentially an act of reaching out. These people, they really want to. The incidents, those who would find out.
Do you think some of them want to be remembered forever, so that's why they do it?
Yep, and that's one of the reasons they do it. They're craving attention. And also, find out while we're here, how many attempt suicide to succeed. And that'll give you a good idea of how many. Because it's a small amount of those who attempt suicide, and that's because they're scared. They're, definitely afraid.
They haven't thought through their problems, and at some point they make up their mind. Like, we knew a beautiful girl in college named Mary Jo Weiss, and she ended up marrying a guy who wasn't that great. He was good-looking, but turned out to be kind of mentally abusive. Well, she planned her suicide to the T. Like, she gave away her clothes. And I guess she got busted for taking a med. She was a nurse. So she lost her job for taking prescription drugs out of the facility. Well, then she hung herself naked, but she had given all her clothes away, like, the day or two before. So she planned it. The sad part was that she had two children. So that was sad.
I don't know. Sad is in the eye of the beholder. If she was treating those kids poorly or whatever circumstances she might have had, the kids might be better off. But, you know, this is whatever it is, you know, I don't really understand it because life is so beautiful and God has given us every day supposed to enjoy it. Enjoy it to the fullest. Make your mark, leave a legacy, and do the best you can to be a nice person. Karma,
not every
karma.
Day is guaranteed.
No.
I think after living in a cold climate, you know, I can learn to appreciate, I'm close to death at times by just my surroundings. And
exactly.
I'm a survivor.
Big time.
A couple people we didn't mention tonight who killed himself was Hunter S. Thompson, a Russian poet named Maria Svetteva, Amanda Todd, a Canadian high school student who committed suicide due to bullying and cyberbullying, Robin Williams, of course, Simone Battle, who was on one of those Simon Cowell shows, and she was on her way to success. Dana Plato, who was in different strokes, killed herself.
Strokes,
and then 11 years later, her son Tyler Lambert killed himself almost 10 years to the day of her death, which is pretty awful. A lot of Asians have killed themselves.
That's because they're perfection.
They can't handle disappointment.
Perfectionists, if you have a perfectionist as a child, you really have to keep an eye on them because they will throw tantrums, they will physically harm themselves if they don't do something correctly.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. That's if you look at any psychological treatise or whatever.
I wonder when people, like I'm looking at this Chinese actress right now named Ruan Fenggen. She was 24 when she killed herself in Shanghai, China, and she was an actress. She was born Ruan Fenggen in Shanghai in 1910 to a working class family. She was a silent film actress and a prominent star. Her suicide led her to become an icon of Chinese cinema, but she came from a working class family. She got a big break at the Linhua studio. I mean, why would someone that young ice themselves?
Because they don't like themselves or they are crazy. I'm trying to tell you, these people are mentally, especially a lot of the women, hormonally imbalanced. And they don't catch it in time, and they don't know that they're doing it. They're blacking out, in essence. And so they don't have the knowledge that they're actually killing themselves.
Well, Judy Garland killed herself. She's
right, but Judy Garland was these people. You know,
she was a heavy alcoholic,
She was crazy. She's out of Hollywood.
Well, some of them went crazy because of the stress in their life. They didn't start out. Like, she had as much pressure. Her parents moved her from a small town in Minnesota to Palmdale to become a star, and they put her on the circuit, you know, like auditions every day, and they put a lot of pressure on her. And I think her sister was in showbiz, too. It was kind of like a Michael Jackson story where they had a lot of pressure as a child and they weren't able to enjoy themselves.
Exactly.
But it is sad. Yeah, it's sad when you see somebody that talented, though, you know, die.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. But you know, then you've got I hate using the word sad because. It just is. you know, if that's the way God's plan was for you, then that's where you're going to go. Purgatory for...
Well, God doesn't plan us to kill ourselves, but he's obviously aware that it's an option that people choose.
Right. Okay.
Let's kind of like back off from this topic for a minute. I'm just going to conclude this section by saying we've been talking
45 minutes on suicide is about 10 minutes too long. But go ahead.
I agree. I'm going to end the conversation by saying I know some people who have died suddenly. And a couple of my friends in church in L.A. died suddenly. And I know people who have killed themselves. The only one that I can think of, you know, immediately, there was one guy in my high school who killed himself and said, "Feed my fish," when he was about 22. But anyway, my brother-in-law shot himself in the head, and my sister and her friend had to pick his brains off the ceiling, and that was a bad time for our family.
Right. Well, I can imagine. My goodness. I know that I used to, when I was a kid, when I was younger, I believe about 20, I had a job as a, I think I might have said this, job as a porter in a hospital. So I had to clean up rooms all the time, and the day that they put me in the autopsy room was the day I quit.
You were an orderly in a hospital?
Not an orderly, the janitor. You know, we were
like
porter.
A temp job?
At the time, it wasn't. It ended up to be very, I mean, I was there about 3 months. And they liked my work in the rooms, and they said, "Okay, we're going to send you down in the basement, and you can clean up the autopsy room." I cleaned up one autopsy room. That was all I had that day. And I said, "Okay." The next day, I called them up and said, "Nope, that's not happening."
Was that in Milwaukee?
Yeah, it's Mount Sinai, downtown on State Street.
My very first job ever was cleaning hospital rooms. It was through a temp agency called Labor Pool. And I think the pay was $3.35 an hour then. And at the end of the summer, they asked me to stay, and I couldn't because I had to go back to UW La Crosse. But for a minute, I considered staying because it was my first full-time job.
Well, no, I mean, it was a job. It was one of my first jobs. Well, not really, but it was one of my first weird jobs where, you know, you have...
You want to hear what my weirdest job ever was?
Go ahead.
It was a data entry job, and we got plastic parts back from patients that they had some kind of insert in their penis to keep their penis hard, and if they failed... They came back to this company, and we had to look at the part, and there was like a label on the plastic bag saying why it didn't work, and we had to enter it in the system.
Hmm. Well, that's not too weird. That's not too weird. I mean, unless it came up, you know, the plastic, they had to send it back, and it was, and you had to pull it out with your hands and
well, you could see how the thing... I wasn't even sure how these men got these things in their wang-wang, but whatever it was, you could see the stains through the bag, and it was gross.
Oh,
okay?
That's pretty gross.
And it was in a weird part of Minneapolis, like in the warehouse district, and it was a night job from like 3 to 10 at night, and I got the creeps.
Oh, you can get the creeps and stuff like that. That's very, very easy. No, I had a job. I've had every job under the sun, except for penis implant inspections. I had one job like that where I sold Slim Fits, the pantyhose slims, the slimmers.
Yeah, I know what those are. Like they were in a little egg.
Well, I guess, but all I know is that they supposedly would pull people's bellies and thighs in, But no, that it just rearranged stuff that didn't need to be
Well, how
rearranged.
did you sell them? Did you sell them from a store or door to door or what?
No. This was a phone room. I'm a phone professional, and also, well, I'm a professional at everything, but the phone room is one of them, and I'm
You were good on the
exceptional.
phones. That's how I met you.
Exactly, I'm
I
exceptional.
was Miss Wood, and you were somebody.
Well, I was just a couple people, but mostly Mr. Logan.
Oh,
And
yeah.
so that was Mr. Yeah, those were the days. But
You had a good phone voice.
yeah, but I thank you.
Did you
But
ever see
for
the
most,
movie Girl 6 by Spike Lee?
no.
Where she's like a sex phone operator, and then one of her clients finally wants to meet her in real life, and he doesn't show up at the end of the movie. It was kind of a sad movie.
Okay. Was he a she? Was she a he?
No, I don't remember. I don't think so. I think
Okay, I don't know.
she was a down-to-earth woman who didn't really belong in that business. You could tell she was a good person, and that she had compromised her soul over a number of years, but she kept the job because it paid the bills, and in the end, she was going to take the one risk for true love, and it didn't pan out, and it was
Okay.
just kind of like, well, that's what I expected anyway, and I can't really remember how the movie ends.
Well, I've had some wild jobs, kind of like what you were talking about. I had a temp agency job with crashed cars, and you have to go into the crash car and inspect it. And then this is like days after, these are all either fatals, fatality
Oh,
accidents, or
God.
so you go into the car and you do whatever inspection, it was just kind of weird. It was weird, but one of the
I
weirdest
had a
jobs.
weird job interview in the San Fernando Valley where first they called, I think I went in there to fill out a paper application, and then they interviewed me over the phone. It was for a sex operator job, like, to make men feel hot. And then I had to change my voice a few times because they said it wasn't sexy enough. And then they offered me the job, but I turned it down.
Right. Well, that was something with me. I at one job interview, it was for a I guess it would be a gay hotline. So it would be, yeah. I didn't know exactly that it was going to be that way. When I scheduled my appointment, I thought it would be a sex line, but I didn't know it was going to be gay. And so I walk in there and it's talking to them, introduction, and they say, yeah, there's going to be a bi and gay hotline. And so I'm
Oh,
like,
Lord.
okay. And so what do? You bail or do you sit and respectfully
I
go
probably would
through
have stayed 2 days just to see what the money was like.
this? Okay.
But
Well, I
maybe,
wasn't going to speak
I
to
felt
many
so
guys.
nervous even in that sex place, that phone sex industry, that I was like sweating. I felt so uncomfortable, and I kept thinking the whole time, what would my Beverly Hills pastor think that I was in this type of job interview? And I don't remember why I turned it down. I think I was in grad school, but I definitely did turn it down.
Right. Well, I would love to hear you talk sexy, because I don't think it
I'm
would
too
be
sexy for my
successful.
clothes. Too sexy for my. I'm too sexy. I guess I won't
Exactly.
be submitting this reel to the Christian Radio Network.
Why not?
Anyways,
That's not as bad as some of these
before
shows.
I hang up, and I guess two of my favorite jobs ever was that I was a park ranger in Virginia at a state park. But the park was right next to the Edgar Cayce Foundation, and I was selling campsites in a remote booth, and I ended up getting a stalker from the Edgar Cayce Foundation who had a crush on me.
Wow.
But that was a good job normally, except for that one infraction, because we got to pick up the debris off the path after Hurricane Gloria, and there was Spanish moss all over the park, and the Navy SEALs trained there. And in the wintertime, we got to repair cabins. And we
It
was a really fun place to work, and we had some retired military there, and we had Fred was the name of the park ranger, but it was just an interesting job, you know what I mean?
I know, I used
like
to work
with we got to ride around in trucks and clean bathrooms, but we also got to clear paths, you know, and we saw the Navy SEALs train in there, and it was just a fun job.
No, I used to work for the Nevada Division of Forestry, but I used to be a pro caddy, or I used to be a caddy for pro tournaments, and
but you might have mentioned it once.
Yeah, no, that's how I got into the high life, if you will. You know, I see how these bastards work. And there's some pretty, you know, mean people. But, you know, for the most part.
Yeah, because they're rich and they're jerks, right?
Amen. So.
Yeah, I never got too much exposure in the golf world. I used to golf between 9th and 12th grade a few times, but we just played at a golf course near our house in Minnesota in White Bear Lake, so. I know they have a couple exclusive golf courses in Minnesota where, like, Tiger Woods came and played a few times, but I wasn't around when he was playing.
Exactly. Now, the guys that I caddied for, they're either on the championship tour, or they're retired totally, or they're dead. But, you know, some of these guys, they were amazing golfers. Probably the craziest golfer I ever saw was Ballesteros. I have caddies in the LA Open and Seve Ballesteros.
I heard a story once about this black guy, you know, who ended up being one of the best in the world. And he started out as a caddy in one of the southern United States courses. And him and his friends finally one day, I don't remember how it happened, but they got permission to play there, and then they got really good. He ended up going pro, but I don't remember his name. It was about a year ago.
Right.
So, we've been talking an hour, and now we're kind of just reminiscing. So my conclusion is we have done a few shows on suicide, and one of John and my previous purpose was it's something that a lot of people consider but never carry out. And it's kind of like thinking about suicide is like creating a death within yourself of a part of your life that's not working. But it's not something that you should really do impulsively. A lot of teenagers do it impulsively, but it's an art form. It's a way to die, but don't carry it out.
Okay.
Don't carry out suicide. Even if you're thinking about it, get help. Call an 800 number or go to your school counselor, because your life has more value than someone who might be bullying you. It has more value than what your current situation is. And God has a hand over your life, and God, you have a purpose for living even if you can't see it. So for anyone listening to this show out of rabid curiosity, we're not, even though I might have listed it under self-help and we're not professional counselors, everybody has a natural curiosity on why people do finally kill themselves. Just like Philip Seymour Hoffman and Robin Williams recently did.
Go
ahead, Don.
You
can do your conclusion now.
I was going to say, I disagree with you in some of that, what you're saying. For the most part, there is the Creator who gives us free will, and he wouldn't have given it to us the opportunity for suicide if it wasn't an option in some form or fashion.
Well, I'm not saying it's an option, but it's something people think about when things are really hard.
Right, exactly.
And we have to face it. I mean, people do think about it. And just think of the kind of world we live in nowadays.
But you got to understand, everybody's committing suicide. All these people who are not eating correctly, who don't exercise, who drink excessively, do drugs excessively, have sex with, whomever, unprotected. You know, we're talking about every one of these people is committing suicide, and who's to judge who, you know, is doing what? If it's good or bad?
A slow suicide would be like eating 24 Krispy Kreme donuts every day.
Exactly, and that's... There are people who do that. People who drink 6 Pepsis a day. That's suicide. People who drink an 18-pack a day. That's suicide. People who smoke 2 packs of cigarettes. That's suicide.
Another form of suicide is being a people pleaser, like expending so much energy on other people that you don't reserve any for yourself or find out who you are as a person and what you like.
Especially what you can enjoy by yourself.
Especially
if it's physically or mentally debilitating. When you start thinking about other people, you forget about yourself, and a lot of your care, your grooming, thinking habits, a lot of those things, you know, they stop.
Well, I worked a couple times this past year. One time I worked 108 hours in 9 days, and I literally got chest pains. It didn't matter if I got proper rest, but I wasn't obviously eating right because I was on the run. And a few times I got chest pains.
Mm-hmm.
One time I gave plasma after working 27 hours straight.
Mm-hmm.
So people do stupid things.
Well, it's suicide. One of the times, I've been in jail a few times, and one question that the psychologist asks you as intake is, do you ever commit suicide? And do you ever think about it? And I always say no, because I'm not. But then they always come back and say, well, why is your BAC so high? It's just like, you think.
What's a BAC?
You kind of go, wow, man, why? Say, how often do you drink? It's like every day, and is it always that high? It's like, yeah, and that's committing suicide. And you kind of go, okay, makes sense.
Wow.
Blood alcohol content.
Okay.
And,
you've been known to do crazy things in your past.
Beyond crazy. But that's why, you know,
But you're a lot better now. You're much healthier, and you think things through, and you have an agenda in life.
Exactly. But that's taking a whole lot of work.
Right, facing yourself, facing your weaknesses, determining your strengths. I thought I'd end the show with John's song, All the Way. I don't think I've ever played it. So do you have any final words?
About this particular topic, suicide is a very, very difficult thing to ever accept, because you do have that guilt. But in many cases, there's a reason.
You mean the living to accept.
Right, for the living to accept. It's something that is very, very easy for some people, because they have the mental capacity to think of themselves not living in this world anymore. But it's also something that some people cannot help. And those are the ones that we may be able to help with your help hotlines that you just mentioned. But if people can...
It is kind of a powerful thing, you know, that where people behave in such a fashion that they think, I'm going to exit this world and go on to the proverbial next world. I mean, there's no guarantees. Like, as a Christian, I can envision that next world, but my method of getting there wouldn't be that type of exit. But for those people who are lost and don't have a vision of their life, either here or the next world, they're the ones who are confused.
Big time. You're absolutely correct. But
end the show now, and I'm going to play All the Way by John Yoder. Good night, and I'll see you next week.
All
okay?
right. And I just wanted to mention that those are the people who don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. But go ahead. Good night.
Well, hopefully they will by the end of this song, if they're in purgatory.
Exactly.
Good night.
Exactly.
Have a good one. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. I'll talk to you later, everybody. Thank you.
I see you're still on the line. Would you have any final words? Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.